Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 5, delivered on January 30, 2014. The title of this lecture is Review of Accounting.
Today, the darkest of all subjects that I cover in this class, the one that will suck the lifeblood out of you, the one that will tear you asunder and make you depressed. Did you hear about the new pizza, emo pizza? Yeah, it cuts itself. Okay. Yes, let us end the frivolity, because today we do accounting. I have said this before, and I'll say it again. We use accounting information. We do know that it is not the best of information for financial decision making, because accounting has to follow rules that are not what we are in, that make the information somewhat less than desirable for us in finance. Specifically, accounting deals in historical information, not in current or future information. Now, it's possible that we can extract future trends from the past, and that's certainly what we do a lot with the accounting information we get. The other problem, of course, is that accounting information includes non-cash flow items. In other words, well, we might see on the financial statements of a firm that the firm has an expense for the current year of $50,000 for building and equipment, but we know very well they spent millions, but they're not allowed to show it all at once. They must capitalize the entire amount and then slowly move the that amount to the to the income statement. So we know that's there. And then, of course, the worst of all the problems is that accounting does not include opportunity costs, those indirect costs. In other words, the money that does not come into your pocket. Accounting deals in money that goes out of the pocket of the corporation, but there is all this money that we give up by making the choices that we make. Not that we make bad choices, but we also have to recognize there are costs involved that just cannot be reflected because accounting is not, rules do not permit that. All of that having been said, we still use accounting information, and you're going to see me use it in this class. You're going to use it too. But we always have to keep this eye on, well, what else is there that we have to take into consideration. Well, first things first here is that now, some of this is obviously, you know very well, this is not news to you, what I'm going to tell you, because I know you all took accounting. You remember every last detail of the course, and indeed you are ready for your CPA exam right now, or not. You all have had your accounting, right, I assume? Okay, good, good. So this is a review. Now, I'm not going to make this a big, deep study of accounting. I need you to know a few basic things in accounting. What the hell? Okay, now, let me see if I can get this overhead projector to work here. Well, no, that's not bringing it down. How do you... Can someone stand here and hold this like this for me? You know what? Is this the... Oh, there, yeah. Oh, sweet. Look at that. Okay. You can tell I'm not one who uses these overheads and all of this all that much. And it, my courses. I don't want to become a PowerPoint professor ever in my life or anything like that. But here we go. Look, financial statements. Now, I'm going to do one thing here right off the bat that's important. And I'm going to tell you, there's one thing in accounting that is not emphasized. They show it to you, but they don't emphasize it. That is actually quite important to financial analysis. And it's something that I was involved in. I found out how important it is when I, in my years as a consultant, as a business consultant. And truth be told, I'll tell you something now, and part of it, the reason I can tell you now is because the statute of limitations has passed. Back in the day, before the rules got really strict, I would do the accounting statements for companies that were trying to go public. And then what we would do is we would find some really down-and-out CPA to sign off on them and say he audited them. Did the same thing with the legal documents. I would prepare them and then find some lawyer who needed some money and say, you approve these, and they would sign off on, he or she would sign off on them for $500. And that meant that the guy would be able to pay his rent. And we would create relationships like that. You can't do that anymore. And it's, in a way, that's great because you get much higher quality information. But at the same time, it is much harder for a small business these days because essentially, right off the bat, you've got to get these people involved in your company who are going to charge you hundreds and hundreds, thousands of dollars for things. And that's really hard, trust me, when you're running a small business to have those kinds of expenses because you're not allowed to do this stuff yourself. You're not allowed to have people who can do it who aren't certified. But there you go. Okay, now, financial statements. There are a number of financial statements I'm sure you were exposed to, and I'm sure you still have them at the top on the top of your head, all of the different financial statements that were out there. Do you remember, madam, do you remember any of the financial statements? Can you give me one of them that was important that you learned about?
Balance sheet.
Balance sheet. You got the idea. There you go. Mother of God, you seem to... Oh, that explains that infinity scarf you're wearing. Fashion is not something you... I am sorry. I like this. Okay, we got our balance sheet. Oh. There's one of the financial statements. Okay, now we're on a roll here. What's another one? This is not tough, son. Go ahead. Oh, you're getting fancy. Okay, fine. I'll put that one down. Statement of cash flows. That's down here. That's one we are interested in finance, by the way, is the statement of cash flows, because that's the one where you actually bring back in the things that were taken out by accounting rules. And so we are very interested in the cash flow and the statement of cash flows. As financial analysts, we will look at that very quickly. Probably before we would look at a profit and loss statement. Okay, what's another one? Yeah, I love it when you talk like that. That's exactly right. There you go, the income statement. Now, the balance sheet and income statement together are very important. Truth be told, the income statement is actually just kind of like a blow up of a small piece on the balance sheet. The income statement is just a detail of the balance sheet. There are a couple of others that are important. Statement of cash flows. Okay, now there's another one that you probably were exposed to, the statement of retained earnings. You remember that one? One of those kind of obscure ones. That's, again, actually just a detail in the balance sheet that is blown up for reporting purposes. It's just another part of the balance sheet that is expanded so we can see the details of it more clearly. Income statement, balance sheet, statement of cash flow, statement of retained earnings. Is there any other ones? There's one more. And it's the one that would not be emphasized hardly at all in an accounting course. Even going forward, you probably wouldn't think about this one. It wouldn't be one that is important. And I'll tell you in a minute why it became important in my world. Woman, you said you're an accountant. Work it, girl. What's the other one? No. That's in the statement of retainer. Ha, ha. I do believe, madam, the word is owned. What is it? It's okay. Actually, this one, even I've gone had people who were double accounting finance majors in like senior courses, and I ask this question, and they look at me with this, you got it right there. These are it. But there is another one that seems so minor, and I'll tell you why it became an important thing, both in the work that I did as a consultant and then as a financial analyst. It's the notes to the financial statements. The notes. You ever seen, you've seen financial statements before. It's like there's this 1, 2, 3, 4 little blocks, like little paragraphs that are in sort of like at the back of your financial statements. Usually you have your income statement, your balance sheet, then your notes to the financial statements, and then the ancillaries, the statement of cash flows and the statement of retained earnings. Now the notes to the financial statement, the first place that I really began to understand that they were important was in the day when I would help companies when they were going public. One of the things that you had to do was not just get all the documents together so that they could do a stock offering, but you also, it wasn't any good for a company to be public if it wasn't publicly traded. So we had to get the company listed on a stock exchange. Now, I was never going to even dream of going New York Stock Exchange or things like that, but we did get companies listed on the NASDAQ, on the over-the-counter, OTC, the Electronic Bulletin Board Service and all that. Yeah, but you have to go through the self-policing organization, NASD, National Association of Security Dealers, to get a approved and get a ticker symbol so that buyers and sellers could see the price of the stock. Every company has to get listed. And on the NASD, to get listed on the NASDAQ, you had to file a form called the 15C211. And it was like you had to include the financial statements, you had to fill in all this information, what the company was about. A lot of it was repetitive from what you'd done in your stock and your documents to the SEC, and what your ticker symbol you wanted was and all that. And then it went for review before their compliance department at the NASD. And the SEC was an absolute pussycat compared to the compliance people at the NASD. They would tear your financial statements up one side, down the other, peel them apart, and just keep saying, no, this 15C211 is useless to us. You need to give us more information. So I learned how to make them in working with one of their compliance officers, an old woman named Claire. She was just mean as dirt. She was hateful. I got to like her a lot. And she explained to me, she said, look, there's a lot about companies that is not in the income statement and balance sheet, statement of cash flow, statement of retained earnings. That's where the notes to the financial statement come in. This is where you explain yourself. Okay, how is it that this number of shares of stock increased? Well, what was it? Was it an offer of something? You have to explain. Well, this was compensation to the directors and the officers or consultants. Well, what is it? How are you going to pay off this loan that you've got, this 5-year bond? This 20-year bond. Well, that's where you explain, well, we have a sinking pool, and this is how much goes into that fund every year. It's in the notes of the financial statement. It was also there that she explained to me, she said, here's your last note. You see, whenever you make financial statements for a company, for a corporation, there's an assumption, an implicit assumption, that they call in accounting the going concern assumption. Were you taught this in your accounting class, the going concern? Okay. Theoretically, a corporation is immortal. It doesn't have a life, it doesn't have a finite life like people do, like humans do. It could live forever. And when you prepare financial statements, you are assuming that it will live forever. That's why you can accrue expenses. That's why you can do all these things in the accounting statements that really wouldn't make sense for a person to do it that way. It's the assumption that this thing is going to live forever. And whether or not it does, that's obviously a lot of corporations don't, but that's how we do it. So she said, look, you are dealing in companies that are so small, they're probably going to die. Your notes to the financial statement, the last one, is where you explain to your investors that these financial statements were prepared with the assumption that the firm was a going concern. That assumption for this company may not be appropriate, and investors are cautioned, equity investors are cautioned that this company is at risk of not being a going concern. She gave me the wording. She said, you put that at the end of these notes. That was the last thing she did before she approved my first company for a listing. She said, you put that as your last note. You get the re-audit, and I will give you a ticker symbol. So I did it. And that was where I began to learn that those notes to the financial statement are where you tell the truth. The accounting is like a story through a veil. But it's in those notes of the financial statement that you get down to the dirty work of explaining exactly what really is going on. So I encourage you, if you are doing investing or you go into financial analysis, one of the first things you remember is go have a look at those notes. Read through them. You're going to see things like how much compensation is being paid to the officers and directors. You're going to find out what kind of stock gimmies are happening, stock options are happening with the big dogs in the company. You're going to find out about things that are going on in the notes of the financial statements. You will also have information about potential liability exposures, because in the notes to the financial statement, if there is some good chance that a lawsuit is going to go adverse to your company, you talk about it there, and you talk about how you're going to cover your ass on it if the other side is awarded a lot of money. That's where you find that kind of stuff, and it can be quite eye-opening. Oh, I didn't know that. You also find out about what their plans are. Sometimes you'll see, well, they bought something. I see that in the financial statements. Go to the notes, and you'll see what it was they bought, and then you can go and do some research that way. So there you are. That's enough about that. But anyway, the balance sheet, the income statement, the statement of retained earnings, statement of cash flows, and then notes to the financial statements. Now we go on to the most important first thing you learn. What's the fundamental equation of accounting? Okay. What is the equation? You got some of the pieces of it. Someone want to help him?
Assets equal liabilities plus capital equity.
Oh. You guys are actually all built for to be accountants. Assets equal liabilities plus owner's equity. That's the fundamental equation. Now, in this lecture, I'm going to give you some equations. I want you to write them down. Make sure that you have them or put a box around them or something like that, because I'm going to give you like a quiz / homework assignment. And as long as you know these equations, I'll give you parts of a financial statement, and then you have to put in the parts that I don't give you. And if you have these equations I'm going to give you, you can figure out how to put the puzzle back together again. It just takes, those puzzles, what is it?
Sudoku.
It's like that. But if you know these equations, it'll all come together very quickly. It's really fast. But anyway, assets equals liabilities plus owner's equity. There's your first one. Keep that one in mind. And as the hidden, as I've brought up before, hidden in here is this concept of the corporate veil. A corporation is responsible for its own liabilities. The investors who are owners, the owners, cannot be hit for money themselves unless they have deliberately mixed their own funds with those of the corporation. As long as they don't do that, the liabilities of the corporation stay with the corporation. If the corporation can't pay its bills, the debt holders can go back to the corporation, but they can't go to the owners. They can wreck the corporation, they can destroy it, they can kick out the owners, they can kick out the management, but they can't make the owners pay a dime. That's just the reality of it. That's called the corporate veil. Okay, now, I'm sure you have seen this one. Revenues minus cost equals profit. That's about as useless as you can get, but it kind of sums up the whole thing. Making this a little bit more realistic, is that your revenues can come from different sources. You'll see often, and I will expose you to financial statements so you can get comfortable with them. And I caution that different financial companies will use different words for the same thing. Like you'll have one company say operating income, and another company will say earnings before interest and taxes. You'll have one company say, this one's a little bit tricky, net income. Another company will call that profit. Another company might even call that earnings. But anyway, revenue could be broken down into different divisions, different products, different regions. You'll see it all kinds of ways. What you're looking for is the total of revenue. However, that's not enough, because sometimes you have an account called returns and allowances. That is a provision for what is expected to be returned as far as refunds go and things like that. So on my financial statements, I assume, for example, that in a typical year, I will probably have two people come back and say, well, the frame came apart, or the picture seems to be coloring, getting discolored or something. So that means that I have to refund it free. So I have to have an R&A allowance. So what you're looking for is net revenue, net of the returns and allowances. Most companies these days are just reporting the net. They're not reporting gross revenue. You look in the notes to the financial statement to find what the gross was and what the returns and allowances. Did I just have a small stroke? Oh. There. Okay. So let's take that one as the first rung. Now, as far as revenues go, we'll have our net revenues. That's all your revenues taken in minus any returns and allowances that you have accounted for. Okay, so now, I'm just making this one a little bigger. The first thing you're going to have is the possibility of a cost of goods sold line. Cost of goods sold represents costs that can be directly attributed to a sale. Right on the button. Directly attributed to a sale. And this one, as I have found out over the years, and especially in my most recent business, is a pain in the butt. Because, you see, you have to separate out what is it about. I'll give you the example of my landscape photography business. I sell one of my framed prints. It's framed, matted, got a nice print on a very high quality archival paper, whole nine yards, got a dust cover on the back, screws, and then the wire, if it's one that can be hung that way, or otherwise the hooks on the ends of it and all that. Great. Okay, now, the cost of the sale, well, that would include, obviously, the frame, which I can directly attribute to that. It would also include the mat, the dust cover. But there's more to that print. What about the paper? Would that be something, would I account for the paper as a cost of goods sold? Unfortunately, that's what I thought. I thought, well, that's obvious. Until I realized, okay, sometimes I run 2, 3, 4 prints before I get one that I can actually frame. What happens if the printer jams up? Where would I put that? It turns out that the part of that product I can't attribute directly to the product because I will chew through paper and ink in a way that I can't directly say this much of that was in that picture up there. So I have to put that in my general expenses down lower. It's more complicated than it sounds. And I thought to myself, how in the world do I do this? I make a rule for myself. I disclose my rule in the notes of the financial statement. And then I say, okay, fine. IRS, if you want to audit my ass, go ahead. You try it a different way. Okay. Now, cost of goods sold is actually something that you would see much more likely in a manufacturing enterprise, some kind of work where they put things together. Let's say that you, on the other hand, want to run your own massage service. Okay, you don't have anything that can be really directly attributable to a product that is produced and sold. So you probably wouldn't have a cost of goods sold. You see that idea?
Yeah, but...
Go ahead.
What about, like...
Your oils?
No, well, yeah, but...
Well, I mean, you might use more on a big person than on a small person, you know? How do you know how much you use? Do you measure before you pour it on? And what happens if it splashes, then you have to put more on? You understand?
Yeah.
Okay, what else would be a cost? Is there anything else that would be directly attributable? You are paid $200 for your deluxe massage. And then from there, okay, so what part of that would be directly attributable that you could measure exactly the amount of money? Can you think of anything that would be directly?
Linens.
The what?
The linens.
Now, there's an interesting thing, the linens. But it would vary from customer to customer, wouldn't it? And what happens if you have linens at one, you're using linen, you put it over your customer, and the customer farts so violently it rips the linen, you have to throw it away. Otherwise, make a tent out of it.
Wouldn't that be a cost per good sold?
Not for overall, it wouldn't, because that's not something that's recurring with every product. It would be something that would just have to be a general expense, because I could say, okay, I used 20 linens this week, and I serviced 18 customers. But next week, I went through linens, like I went through 40 linens. I don't know why, but, you know, I had 12 customers. It wouldn't be a consistent amount that was being used. And unless you wanted to try to attribute, keep count of every linen with every customer, which would be an incredibly complicated thing, it would be impossible. On a practical level, that's what I thought I could do. It just becomes impossible to do because you spend all your time trying to match how much did I spend on this customer versus how much did I get, and then accumulate those every week or at the end of every day. It would become virtually impossible to do in that kind of a business. Ultimately, we will see this more likely in a manufacturing sort of environment. Okay, so now we call revenue minus cost of goods sold gross income. Gross income. Gross. And then, below the gross income, you start knocking off the general expenses. One at a time, you just clock through. You clock through, okay, your utility bills. You clock through your wages and salaries. That's general. You would clock through other things like your shipping expenses. All those things would go under there. Meals and entertainment, mileage allowances, all those kinds of things go under the general expenses. So we call these the selling, general, and administrative, SG&A expenses. But the problem is that what we are doing here is we are recognizing when the expense is incurred, not when it occurs. So in other words, I could have expenses on an income statement that I haven't paid yet. I might get my bill for my utilities on the 21st of the month if I pay it on the 2nd of the next month, but it's on the previous month's financial statements that I recognize the expense, because it doesn't matter when I pay it, it's when I get the bill. Because as soon as I get the bill, I have the expense and I have an account payable entry. And then when I pay it, I simply match that account payable off against a credit to cash. If you remember how bad that kind of stuff is. Okay, so, and we're going to get back to that in a minute. But there's another expense that is very important to us in finance because it doesn't exist. But it is right there on the financials, on the income statement. It's called depreciation expense. It is the amount of a capitalized expense that is going to be allowed recognition in the current period. So in other words, if I were to, say, buy a $100,000 building, and I was not allowed to say $100,000 I spent, I might have a 10-year straight-line depreciation, so only $10,000 a year would show up as a depreciation expense. It would not be the whole amount. This is one of the killers on a financial, on an income statement, because that depreciation, and there's also one called amortization for non-physical goods, for non-physical things to capitalize. It doesn't exist. There was no $10,000 spent. I did not write a check to someone called Mr. Depreciation. I didn't do it. Therefore, this thing, I'm going to have to, at the end of the day, before I can really look at financial statements and see financial information, I got to get that thing added back in and then take out anything that was actually a big expense, a real cash out of my pocket. But I got to get rid of that for later. But we'll leave that there for now. Now, at this point, gross income minus SG&A expenses minus depreciation and amortization expenses brings us down to what is called operating income. Now, the thing, though, is that the other name that you'll see for this is EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. Watch it, because I've even seen other names for it on financial statements. I got blindsided last semester. I looked like an idiot because I was looking at a Fortune 500. I was showing a Fortune 500 company's financial statements, and I said, well, it looks like they don't have operating income anywhere, because I was scanning for the line operating income. I was scanning for the line earnings before interest and taxes. It wasn't there. Turned out that it was there. They just had another name for it. I can't remember what it was. But if you get to a line where your selling, general, and administrative expenses have been whacked out, your depreciation has been whacked out, whatever is the line that comes as a result of that is the operating income, otherwise known as the earnings before interest and taxes. Okay, then what comes next is we're going to take out the interest expense. Whatever interest expense you have paid in the current quarter or current period, your interest expense. And that takes us down to earnings before taxes. And then you subtract off your taxes, and there you are at net income. Get out of your way here. And that's the end of it. But be sure you write this down, because this is another piece of the puzzle. Each block here is an equation that would be useful for you. By the way, I'm going to do an example of this in class, how you put the equations together to get the results that I want. And then there will be one for you to take over the coming weekend. You'll do another one. Okay. That's enough of that one. That is the income statement, otherwise sometimes known as the P&L, the profit and loss statement. Now the balance sheet. And again, this is review, and I already got a headache doing this, but here we go. Assets. On one side, you'll have your assets. On the other side, you're going to have your liabilities and owner's equity. The asset number at the bottom has to match the sum of liabilities and owner's equity. Do you remember that, getting those two to equal each other? I remember finally I thought, well, maybe if I multiply by the page number, I'll get the number to match. You know, one way or the other. Okay. Now on the asset side, current assets. These are liquid assets, disposable or removable within a year. The biggest one, the first one, the most liquid would be your cash and marketable securities. Sometimes they break these two up. Sometimes they leave them together. Sometimes they call one of them something other than that. It can be all over the board. But cash is king. It's the one that you can spend today. And then you go down from there. The next one that might be use that's there is the accounts receivable. Accounts receivable. That is actually money that you have recognized as revenue that you didn't get. In other words, I have, and it happens at shows with people who are credit worthy, they'll come in and they'll say, well, I want to buy this and I will sell it to them and I will do a bill me later on it. They pay in the next month. So I have the revenue. I'm recognizing I got revenue, but it ain't in my pocket. So I have to say revenue, $500, matched with accounts receivable of $500. And then when they pay me, I knock it out of accounts receivable and pop it into cash. So that, again, this is going to be an important thing because this will help us know the difference between what the income statement said about revenue and what really happened with money in the pocket. Now, there are other ones, too, in here that are, to a greater or lesser extent, important. You have prepaid expenses. If I pay my insurance bill for a year, let's say I have an insurance bill of $1,200. I pay it all in January. I don't get to say $1,200 in insurance expense for my January statement. All I can do is peel off $100 of that and put $100 in my insurance expense line on my income statement. The rest of it is prepaid, sitting $1,100. So month by month, as I expense $100, I knock $100 off here and then take that out of cash over up here. Here's one, inventory. Again, a total pain in the ass in reality. How much do you have sitting in your shop? See, because if I buy, I'll go to a place like Michael's. I'll buy $800 worth of frames and mats. There they are. I can't put those as an expense. I'm not allowed to. I have to put those in inventory, and then as I sell, I can knock off in my cost of goods sold. So, in other words, the inventory is a killer on me, too, because it's hiding what really happened. I got $800 out of my pocket. I can't say I got $800 out of my pocket because I haven't sold these. They park in assets as inventory, and then only if I sell something can I knock off something from my inventory and put it into my expense, my cost of goods sold. So this inventory builds up. And we're going to talk about how you analyze these in the next lecture, what these really mean. But know this right now. Big, big inventory. Well, yeah, I got a darn nice big inventory. But, I mean, the cash, I was creamed. I get creamed when I do those big buys because I can't recognize an expense. So there I am. I get whacked on sales tax when I sell it. But otherwise, I'm paying expense. I'm eating expenses and then it looks like my profit is huge. IRS and the state tax the hell out of me But there I am sitting there. I didn't get that kind of money. I'm sitting in inventory waiting for the shows in the spring and the summer. There you go. But anyway, that's your total current assets. Then you have your liabilities. Oh, I'm sorry, first, long-term assets. Okay, the long-term assets are the things that are durable. Your property, plant, and equipment, PP&E. Those things park on the balance sheet, and you're not allowed to recognize the entire amount you pay. You have to depreciate using, you remember, straight line, double declining balance, MACRS. Do they still teach the sum of years digit method in your class? That was kind of a weird one. There's all these different ways of depreciating. But in other words, you have your property, plant, and equipment, PP&E. Sometimes it's just called fixed assets. Minus your accumulated depreciation on the asset. Minus your accumulated. How much you have taken over to the balance sheet in total over the years or over the periods. And that would be your net fixed assets or whatever you want to call them. And again, you'll see different words for it. Now, there will also be one, if you have intellectual property, you'll also see one called goodwill if you pay more than if you pay too much for an asset or something like that. But there you go. Okay. Add all of those up, and you get your total current assets. You add your two here, and that gives you your total current total assets. I'm sorry. Total assets. Current assets plus long-term assets, net long-term assets, is your total assets. Yeah, this is grueling. Liabilities. Yeah. Property, plant, and equipment. They might use a different term now. Is that what they're still using in the accounting courses here, is PP&E? Okay, I remember a couple of, a long time ago, I was teaching Wright State, I think it was, and I was told that there they just said P&E, plant and equipment, not PP&E. No. But okay, liabilities and owner's equity. You start with your liabilities. And there are your short-term and your long-term. Short-term. Now, most of these are accruals and things like that. Okay, I recognize that I paid my workers, but I haven't written the checks yet. I recognize that I paid a dividend, but I haven't actually paid it yet. This is where you have the short-term. Okay, I recognize that I have a bill that I said I paid in my income statement, but I still have it on my books. I haven't actually cut a check for it. So you would have all of these things that are like accounts payable. And it could be, accruals, short-term accruals. In other words, these are things that you have actually recognized as expenses, but you haven't paid them yet. When you pay them, when you actually pay them, you just knock it out of this piece and then take a chunk out of your cash. And it no longer, it doesn't have anything to do with the income statement. Now, accrued, short-term accounts accrued, I'm going to put that. Now then you have the big one, the 800-pound gorilla, accounts payable. This is the bills that you have recognized that you paid, that you didn't pay. Like my utility bill came in, okay, I incurred it, so I recognize that I've paid it, but I actually haven't paid it, so it's actually an account payable. Okay, I got merchandise from one of my suppliers. Yeah, I recognize that I paid it, but I haven't actually paid it. I'm holding off. I'm riding it a little bit. That's a liability. It's a short-term liability. And there's a whole science and math to managing your accounts payable and your accounts receivable, the whole nine yards. Okay, now, there are sometimes you'll see something called current portion of long-term debt. This one shows up enough that you have to keep an eye on it. Later, I'm going to say, all right, I need you to give me the number for the long-term debt. And there will be a line, you know, long-term debt, bonds payable, something like that. You got to watch it because you want to add back in this current portion because it actually is something that you're recognizing that you paid, but you haven't paid it really yet. That could be a bad sign if you're recognizing something that you've paid that you aren't going to be able to pay down the road. So it's something important just to keep an eye on. And you've got some other ones here that are here and there. But then that's your total short-term liabilities. And then you have your long-term liabilities. These are where you see the big long-term debt of the company. Bonds payable. Notes payable, bonds payable. You might even see other lines, like if they have some kind of a liability exposure that they're going to, that they're already taking, getting ready for, like they're going to get creamed with a lawsuit and they're building up the money for it. It might show up here, something like that. So you got to keep an eye on that one too. And then so you have your short term, you have your total long term liabilities. Add them up, these two together, and that is your total liabilities. God, this is a lot like work. This is the worst lecture you'll have as far as tedious goes. Total liabilities. Okay. Now comes the owner's equity. Owner's equity. Where are the payable, PBLE? Yeah, I'm beginning to lose my will to live here doing this accounting. Okay, cut me some slack. Okay, owner's equity. I want to take you through a little bit of a. This was kind of a pain in the butt. You see, when a company raises money through ownership, selling ownership interest, it would be through either common stock or preferred stock or a combination of those. I'll leave off the preferred stock for now. I'll mention it later in the semester. But we got common stock. So let's say that, okay, you have done a public offering of common stock. And let's say that you sold five, and I'll do an example over here. Let's say you sold 100,000 shares common stock par value 1 cent per share at $10 per share. Sweet mother of God, let me get through this. Did they teach you about par value? It's actually kind of like an ancient part of the corporation. Back a long, long time ago, a share of common stock, it's just a piece of paper. But a company would say that that piece of paper itself actually had a tiny bit of value to it. In practical terms, it was like the company was saying, we know there's a corporate veil, but the par value represents the exposure that a shareholder is willing to bear for the company. Does that make sense? It's kind of weird. So in other words, if I own a share of stock in this company, I technically, by that par value, the stock piece of paper itself is worth a penny, and that's what I would pay to a debt holder if the company couldn't come through. It's almost meaningless now. And you see many corporations these days, when they charter, they say par value zero. That no par value. So that they don't go through this little weird thing that you have to do on the accounting statements. Now, when I formed corporations, what I usually did was, I did one, 100 million shares of common stock, par value 0.0001 per share common. It was a minuscule value, but it was there. And it's just the tradition. So let's say that the company actually sells all of the stock at $10 a share. The total common stock value here would be $1 million. But I can't just say $1 million. By the rules of accounting, I have to break it up into two pieces. $100,000 times 0.1 is $1,000. So what I would have to do is say that there was $1,000 at par and $999,000 of additional paid-in capital. It's the weirdest rule, and I mean it's antiquated, it's ancient. Like I said, some companies don't even want, they say no par value. We charter with no par value on the common stock. So they don't have to deal with this. But normally, in the shareholders' equity, you will see the two lines. Common stock at par. And then you will see a line, additional paid-in capital. Just add them together. Sometimes they'll add them together. I've seen financial statements go both ways. Sometimes there's total common stock. And then there are others that just leave the two broken apart like this. But one way or the other, it has no material meaning whatsoever. And it's just one of those things to confuse us. See, that's nasty because now I got saliva. Actually, that ink kind of gives you a buzz. Decent. Chase that with some of this. Oh, yeah, that kicks. Okay. Now we do retained earnings. This is that little piece, retained earnings. Okay, and this is where a couple of other equations you're going to need will come in. Okay. The first thing we're going to do is have the retained earnings that were there at the beginning of the period. How much owner's money had come in from the beginning of the life of the company to the start of the current period. And then we're going to have the net income. How much has come in the current period that adds to the wealth of the owners. But then we gave the owners some of that money back as dividends, so that's not in the company anymore. So, once we have the retained earnings at the beginning of the period, how much money has accumulated that is claimable by the shareholders? Add to that how much X new came in after the bills were paid. Minus what we gave the shareholders to shut them up and make them happy. That will be the retained earnings at the end of the period. Then finally, you add up the common stock value, par plus additional paid in, plus your retained earnings that have come in that are there at the end. You put those two together, and that is the total stockholders' equity. Oops. This number, total stockholders' equity plus total liabilities, those two numbers together should equal that, total assets. And if they do, you've made a mistake somewhere because you can't get it right the first time. But that's the grueling part. And praise God, I'm through it. Look, a couple of pointers. Retained earnings doesn't really exist. There's no such thing. You don't have an account. No corporation has an account that's called retained earnings. It is merely a symbol of the company's book value. We use the term book value. What in the book is this company worth as far as the shareholders are concerned? But it has no relevance whatsoever to the reality. You have companies that have book values that are huge, and the company is dying. On the other hand, you have companies that have a book value that is just nothing, but they are actually very okay. They're doing fine. They're doing quite well. The retained earnings actually doesn't mean anything whatsoever to the reality of whether a corporation is healthy or not. But still, you'll see these people on TV, the talking heads of finance. Well, I would recommend you buy this because the book value of this company is really good. And the price isn't reflecting the book value. So this is definitely an undervalued company. Buy it. I hear that all the time. Well, you stupid hoe handle. The market said, oh, you've got millions and millions of traders, analysts, computers, streaming information, cutting and parsing and putting together the knowledge base of years, decades, centuries. And you genius, you look at the book value and see a huge number there and say, well, the price is too low for that wonderful book value per share. Well, good for you, asshole. That's why I don't go on the radio shows that I did one time. Okay, now let's talk. Let's talk turkey. The balance sheets for two consecutive periods, the current period and last period, helps us understand cash flow. First of all, obviously, to understand the cash flow, what really matters, cash flow, you would have to, first of all, add back depreciation expense because it didn't really exist. You would obviously also have to subtract out some things and add some things in. Okay, but again, I can't emphasize it enough. Profit and loss mean nothing. Cash flow is what matters to a corporation, and it's also what matters to you as a person. Have you seen those news releases from Atlanta where all those people are lined up? They're stuck in ungodly 2 inches of snow down there in Atlanta. Well, some of them have been there now, Alex, for 36 hours. Okay, you've got people in that line who make a lot of money. They have a huge bank account. But that doesn't matter because they're sitting in their car with a couple of bucks in their pocket. They got to take a shit and they haven't eaten in 2 days. Suddenly, their wealth is irrelevant. Their profit means nothing. It's just what they can pay out, what they can bring in. And there's nothing there except a very sad long line and that awful 2 inches. Oh, God, there's snow on the ground. 2 inches of snow. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. You see, cash flow is what matters to us. So when they put in the accounting statements depreciation expense, we're going to add minus $20,000 depreciation expense. I'm going to put that sucker right back in because that wasn't cash flow. But I'm also going to want to know about things like, okay, the expenses don't recognize exactly what I actually paid in cash out of the company. I could have expenses of $20,000. But I didn't pay it. I owe you $5,000. And so you send me a bill. Dear asshole, you owe me $5,000. Okay, so I'm going to put that right on my financial statements. An expense of $5,000. But you know what about the actual paying you that? That comes under the accounting category, which you might not have heard about. It's called bite me. Uh-huh. You see, because, on the expenses, it looks like $5,000 went out. Didn't. But it shows up in the accounts payable. So in other words, if I see my accounts payable go up from the last period to this period, that means that I actually have more money than I said I did. Again, if I see any liability go up, that would mean that I have more money than I say I do. Because if the account payable went up, that means I said something on the expenses that didn't happen. So, again, the first thing I want to do is I want to say, okay, any kind of liability, if it rises, I would have to add that delta, that change, in to see what really happened with cash flow. Because that $5,000 looks like, I'm poor. I don't have any money. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I got $5,000 because I didn't pay you. So in other words, if on this quiz I were to say, all right, your accounts payable went up, is that an addition to cash flow or a deduction from cash flow? What would you say? Exactly. You would just put a plus. Yeah, that adds to cash flow. Because I said I paid something, I didn't pay it. So anytime you have a liability going up, well, guess what? That is actually means more cash than I said I did in my profit line. Again, whenever a liability goes up from the last period to this period, that actually means that I have more cash than my profit says I do. So I would have to add that extra amount to my net income to get real. Okay, now let's talk about when a liability goes down. I've already recognized it in my expenses that I paid it. If it's in the accounts payable, it's over with as far as the income statement goes. Now it is in the world of the real, the cash flow. So accounts payable has gone down. Finally, it turns out that you are married to a guy named Edward who spent 5 years in prison and developed quite big muscles, and he has some prison friends, and they have some biker friends, and they come to encourage me to pay you. Okay. I give it to them. They have a counseling session with me in which they show me how I can be dribbled down the basketball court. And so then I pay it, okay? Okay, it's nowhere in the income statement. That's gone. It's with Jesus now over there. What matters, though, is that now an account payable, I can now finally, and I'm so glad I did this, I finally paid you, so that my accounts payable went down by $5,000. I've taken care of it. Account payable went down, cash went down, all balance sheet stuff. So if a liability drops from the last period to this period, that means money came out of my pocket that's nowhere in the profit statement. So anytime a liability would drop, that would be money out of my pocket. So what I do is look, okay, what went up, what went down. That's a knock. Anytime a liability goes down, that's a knockdown of cash from what my profit says. Now let's talk about assets. Let's try accounts receivable. I just sold $2,000 worth of my artwork. Okay, but they're not going to pay me until it's a corporate sale, and they'll cut me a check next month. But for right now, I am have to recognize revenue of $2,000 that I didn't get. But it's right there. The income statement says my revenue is $2,000, so my profit is lying by $2,000. So whenever I see an account receivable rise, that would mean that my profit is overstating what happened. So when an asset rises, that actually, I have to take that away from my profit, because my profit is claiming that money came in that really didn't come in. And that's something you have to watch out for. You can have revenue that's really great, but it's all showing up in account receivable. Well, you're going to starve to death because it's not there really. At the same time, suppose my accounts receivable drop. Well, what that means is that someone paid me. I got money. I can go to Denny's. Grand Slam. They got like the $6 one and an $8 one and a $10 one. You know, take a girl there. You know, go for broke. Let her buy the $6 one. So in other words, if an asset drops, that is a plus to your profit line. Y'all good on that? That's all there is to it. It's actually kind of simple. So in other words, if I saw my property, plant, and equipment go up by $5 million, there ain't no $5 million. I'm not allowed to put that on my income statement. Well, where that's happening? Well, darn it. That is all on the balance sheet. And so my assets went up by $5 million. My cash flow went down. I paid that sucker. I paid that bill. So I have to recognize that as a whack to my profit, because $5 million did come out of my pocket. Any kind of asset, if you compare the last period to this period, if an asset goes up, that means that you paid money for something. And that is not in your income statement. So you have to say, all right, money came out of my pocket. I got to take that away from profit, because profit is not recognizing something that just knocked me for a loop out of my wallet. Through the grinder now, I'm going to show you and something about this is actually kind of important, is this. Let me kill this for a while and hope that, there we go, document camera. Now there are two columns here. These are completely different companies. Don't get confused that they're the same company. I'm showing you one right here. Hoping that, can you see that? Is that bright enough? That sucks. Autofocus. Well, that just about made me hurl. Let me zoom this in a little bit. Okay, now. There will be two of these, and on the quiz, all you do on the quiz is just fill in the numbers that I ask you for, okay? Now, in ReggieNet, hear me well. When you type a number into ReggieNet, just a pure number, no commas, no spaces. No matter what ReggieNet says, it's confusing. So if there's a number I say, well, what is net income? And it's $5,500, you put 5500. No dollar sign, no space, no comma, ever. If you do that, you will get it wrong, and then you'll send me an email, and then I will eat your ass. And I'm not going to do that, because I was kind of planning on steak and shake tonight. Okay. Well, how the hell do we Where is there anything here that we could put in? You see, what will happen is that these puzzles begin with, what do I do? It comes to that ancient philosophical question, WTF. Is there anything there you see that I could fill in just to start? What? Non-current liabilities. Really? Oh, hey, sweet. Okay, there we go. Do you see I can put that one in there? Because current plus non-current liabilities would be your total liabilities. Well, I've got my current liabilities. I've got my total liabilities. So that one would have to be $100,000. By the way, there's two of these. This one will be one of them on the quiz. So if you get any of those wrong, you are lame, because I'm going to do them for you right now. Or at least as much as I have in 4 minutes here. We should be able to get through it. Okay, now, what else? Is there anything else that I could do? Let's see. Retained earnings. Oh, look. Look here. Do you see retained earnings at the end of the year? Oh, look at this. You remember the equation that said retained earnings at the beginning plus net income minus dividends is retained earnings at the end? So in other words, retained earnings beginning plus net income minus dividends equals retained earnings at the end. I will. Do you remember that one? Well, look, I've got my retained earnings at the beginning. I got my dividends paid. I got my retained earnings at the end. So there's only one thing I don't know. It would be the net income. Do you see that? Okay, that's how you do these. Just keep thinking until you find the one where there's an equation you know, but there's one unknown, and then you'll be able to get it. What does net income come out to be? If you work this out, what is it? 40,000. Okay. The hell? Okay, 40,000. Is that right? Okay, because I'm not using my calculator. Okay, now what can we do here? Do you see one that's an easy pick-off right here? Expenses, do you see it? Okay. So revenue minus, boy, they're paying out a whack of money. $160,000 in expenses would get us to $40,000 in profit. Okay. So common stock and capital in excess of par, additional paid in capital, is $520,000 plus retained earnings at the end would have to be your total common stock, your total shareholders' equity. 520 plus 270. Do you see that? 520 plus 270 comes out to be, for God's sake, someone help me. 790. Okay, now, total liabilities plus common stockholders' equity would be total assets by the fundamental equation. Remember that one? So, 140 plus 790 would be the same on the right side as the left side, $930,000. And remember, when you key these into ReggieNet, just the pure number, no space, no comma. Decimals always, yeah, but no dollar sign, just a pure number. And then you got just one left here. 80 non-current assets, but you got your current assets, you got your total assets. So, help me out here for God's sake. 850. There you go. And now you've gotten through it. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.